some good and I've done some bad. Most fun that I ever had. I'm singing my songs for you. And if I should go astray, I get down on my knees and pray, say, God, forgive me for what I do.
This is Peace Talks, a series of programs exploring peacemaking and nonviolent solutions to conflict. Beverly Flanagan, author and professor at the School of Social Work at the University of Wisconsin, writes of forgiveness. Forgiveness is a rebirth of hope, a reorganization of thought, and a reconstruction of dreams. Once forgiving begins, dreams can be rebuilt. When forgiving is complete, meaning has been extracted from the worst of experiences and used to create a new set of moral rules and a new interpretation of life's events. Today on Peace Talks, a story of forgiveness.
I'm Suzanne Kreider. Phil Padilla and Frank Talardo of Taos share an unusual bond. In July 2003, Frank Talardo's son, Eric, and two other young men, Nathaniel Maestas and Alfredo Rayal, were shot to death. Phil Perea's son, Jason, was convicted of the three murders. Instead of polarizing themselves, Perea and Talardo began working together to help Taos youth out of the cycle of violence. The two men are now developing a trade school as an alternative to gangs, and they're both here today. Welcome to Peace Talks, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Frank, I read that when you first learned of Eric's death, you were really angry the first day, but by the end of the second day, that had changed. What happened?
Well, first of all, I'm a Christian, and the natural thing to do when something like this happens is, you know, you're angry, but I honestly believe that God touched me on the second day, and he knew that he had to get the anger out of me, and he did, and I had to be strong for my family. And I was.
When you say God touched you, can you describe what that means?
Well, it's kind of hard to explain, but I just felt a peace come into me, and I knew that my son was a Christian, which really helped a lot. I knew where he went. I honestly believe he's in heaven right now, in a way better place than where we're at. And he has no more worries.
So tell us about Eric. What was he like?
Eric, he had a good heart. He was a good-hearted kid. He was a funny guy. They always tell me I'm funny. And they would say, Eric's like you. He was a funny guy. But he was always making jokes and funny comments and stuff. And I remember that the most about him. He had, he had this beautiful set of hair on his head. And every time I'd see him, I'd rub him on the head like a little puppy and hug him and tell him I loved him and stuff. And I always liked doing that.
Phil, tell us about Jason.
Jason is more like an individual that always hung around by himself. He took care of most of his worries and stuff like this, whether he needed to pay his rent or he always stood on his own. And he was fun to be around with and so forth. He's got a little girl that he really admires. And he just takes her all over the place. Anywhere he used to go, he'd make sure that he'd make room for his little girl. And He was just a lovable person. He just seemed to get along with people, make friends and everything. But as far as hanging around with a bunch of friends, he was more like a loner, more by himself.
You know? And so tell us where he is today and what's the status of the case?
At the present time, he's in Las Lunas.
So he's currently in a correctional facility?
Right. Okay. He got two life sentence of 30 years apiece concurrently, and what I mean by that is 30 years total right now.
How does he feel about things now?
Well, he turned around and he apologized, and he even wrote me a letter, which I haven't actually given it to Frank, and said that he wanted to for me to give it to Frank and tell him how sorry he was, and the mistake that he did was a great one. And he tried to apologize to the other families, and he was quite remorse at the trial, and he regrets what he'd done.
And Frank, have you met with Jason since Eric's death?
No, I haven't.
Talk about forgiveness. How have you been able to completely forgive Jason for any role he might have played in Eric's death?
I know most people can't understand how I could forgive even so quick. The way this came about is after Eric's death, I started praying a lot. And I prayed for like 3 weeks to a month, just day and night. And one day I was walking out of my house, and it's like the Lord spoke to me and said, you need to call Phil Perea and tell him that you forgive the family, the son, Jason. So I did. I did what the Lord told me to do, and I called Phil. We set up a meeting with his pastor and my pastor, because Phil's a Christian too.
So, you know, typically with violent crimes, it seems like it's difficult for the victim's family to forgive the accused, and particularly their family, much less collaborate together. So, Phil, tell us the story about how you two were able to create this bridge and work together.
I got a call from Ben Maestas, which is my pastor in Taos, and told me that Frank wanted to meet with me. At that time, I got that phone call when I was in the office of my son's lawyer. The lawyer said, don't go. And I said, why? I said, your son just finished killing his son. They're going to set you up, and they're going to kill you. I don't care what you think, but I've seen it so many times, they're setting you up. When I got out of there, the first thing my wife told me is that, you're going, aren't you? I said, yeah. I know Frank, I know part of his family, and I want to meet with him. I want to see what this man's got to say. When I showed up, we showed up at the church, Calvary Chapel in Taos. Frank showed up a little bit late, and then came in, and the first thing that came out of Frank's mouth was, you tell Jason that I forgive him. And he was kind of, at the time, he said, I'm a little shaky, I'm a little nervous, but what I want to know is, can you help me? And I said, sure. What is it you want? He said, I want to start a program for the youth.
Well, let me interrupt you, Phil, because I'm curious, because we're going to talk a lot about the program that y'all are working on. But I want to go back to really the courage it took you to go to that meeting. I mean, you must have been a little bit worried if people were telling you, hey, he might retaliate. How did you overcome that fear?
Well, for the first 2 weeks, I carried a gun. Everybody in town tell me, you got all the right in the world to walk into that police station and ask for a permit, and they'll give it to you because your life is in danger. Not only from Frank, but there's two other fathers. And the first thing they said was, they're going to wipe out the Pereas. I'm the only Perea in Taos. And there's three families coming at me. You know, right after I got a peace of mind, I said, Lord, I hand everything on to you, my son, the whole situation. I put the guns away. I don't need them. And I said, every morning I wake up and I look outside and I say, what a beautiful day to die. If it was my turn, it'd be right there and then. I'll say thank you. Why? You're just sending me home a little sooner. That's all. I'm not worried about death.
So it's okay. You're really at peace.
Yes.
Well, Frank, talk about the possibility of retaliation, because it does seem like that's part of our culture, is that people would expect you to retaliate for your son.
Well, the thing about it is I knew Eric really good. I know that he wouldn't retaliate in that way. He wouldn't want me to. and I wouldn't want him to do it if it was me that was dead. I told Eric's friends at the funeral, at the burial, because I heard a lot of kids saying retaliation, and Eric was well-loved by a lot of friends. And I told him, no retaliation. I don't want no blood on my son's hands. And that's the way I've always felt about myself, too. I'd never wanted any blood on my hands. You know, if somebody comes after me with a gun, I'm going to let them shoot me. I'm not going to try and shoot them back. I'll let them take me out. But that's just the way I grew up, and those are my beliefs.
Well, I'm really impressed with the with your religious beliefs that each of you have. And is that really a requirement for people to forgive and for people to just trust without carrying guns? What do you think, Frank?
No, it's not a requirement. Anybody could forgive non-Christians, Christians, whoever they are, they should learn to forgive. If everybody could forgive or learn to forgive, just think how this world would be.
What do you think, Phil?
Forgiveness is a healing process. Without forgiveness, I mean, you could get ruined within yourself. Christians usually, and there's a lot of fly-by-night Christians, so-called Christians, you don't know their true colors until something in this occasion happens. If you really feel that you're backed up against the wall and say, Lord, help me, He will. And if you believe in any respect that it'll be solved, resolved without violence, it'll happen. And it'll start with peace of mind, peace within yourself, and saying, I got to work at it. But just to say, I forgive you, and turn around and be bitter, hate, and everything, it won't work.
This is Peace Talks. I'm Suzanne Kreider. We're talking with Frank Talardo and Phil Padilla of Taos about forgiveness. Frank's son was shot to death last year, and Phil's son has been convicted of that murder. So, Frank, we've been talking about forgiveness, and this is just a broader view of it, because your situation was really personal, and it's something that happened to your family. But when you look at global situations and terrorist attacks and countries retaliating against other countries, how do you view the role of forgiveness? Do you think an entire nation should forgive each other?
Yeah, I honestly do believe that, because if we don't, destruction's ahead of us. We have to learn to forgive each other. Everybody has to learn to forgive each other.
Yeah, but what would you advise? I mean, because there's a lot of fear in the United States, I think, that if we don't retaliate, then terrorists will think they can just take over. So if you were an advisor, say, to President Bush, what would you tell him?
Well, I think President Bush did the right thing. We had to go in and show force, because I understand it's a fine line, but we have to show that we can't be taken advantage of either. But like I said, the end result has to be forgiveness by both sides. Some people never forgive, but unforgiveness will eat you alive too. So you have a choice. You know, if you forgive, you know, I think your life will be a lot better. If you don't forgive, I don't know what path your life is going to take. But I'm on President Bush's side. I honestly believe we did the right thing.
Let's talk about the violence rates, because y'all have mentioned that. I know there are different reports about the high crime rates in Taos, and there's one at a website called homefare.com that says crime in Taos is 4 times the national average. And they show the statistics that in a town of just less than 5,000 people, there were 21 homicides and 511 aggravated assaults in Taos in 1 year. So, Phil Perea, what do you think makes Taos more susceptible to violence?
Lack of work. There's teenagers that come out, graduate. You don't have no choice except stick around and do nothing except get in trouble. If the work economy was higher in Taos, I could see them getting a job and staying busy within themselves. There's hardly any work process going on for teenagers, and then they don't want to hire some of these guys, and if they do, it's minimum wages.
And Frank Tallardo, did you grow up in Taos?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So how are things different?
Life is rougher nowadays. The parents need to get more involved with their kids. I'm even guilty of that myself. I should have been more involved in Eric's life. I tried to be sometimes, but he had already made too many friends, and he wanted to be with his friends. But I should have gotten more involved when he was younger. But that's what I think would help a lot, is if parents got more involved. Kids see their parents for 5 minutes. They go home and eat and sleep, and they're gone. The parents don't see them very much.
So parents, and also, is it something about guns, like kids have more access to guns, or there are more guns? What's changed?
Yes, I honestly believe there is more guns. There's guns being made every day, and they're being stolen, or you know, parents have guns in the houses. They need to lock them up or whatever they have to do. But guns are deadly. I know they'll never do away with guns, which they shouldn't, but they need to put them away in safes or something.
Phil, tell us more about what the two of you are doing to improve things in Taos for young people.
When we had that meeting in church and I first talked to Frank here, he mentioned something about doing something for the youth, not ping pong, not basketball, anything like that, but something they could work with their hands. We came up with a solution of a body shop. Body shop where they could work with their hands and be proud of what they built. Most of them guys are good at what they do. Take the Cholos, for instance, the lowriders. You know how much pride they put into them cars? Every bolt in that car has been gone over, and they dress it up, and they take pride in what they do because they built it with their own hands, blood, sweat, and tears, you might want to call it. We don't have anything like that. How many times have you seen somebody say, I'm taking a mechanic school? Where? Phoenix, Arizona. Why can't it be Taos? Oh, I'm taking wood carving. Where? Phoenix. Why couldn't it be in Taos? And I feel you give these kids something to do with their own hands to get them off the street, you got something working for you. By the same token, we're looking at once a week have the parents come in and spend the time and see what their kids are doing, take pride in what they're doing, and back them up in what they're doing. Not just to build a lowrider, a hot rod, anything in that respect, but to see that they're interested in building something within themselves. And I think that'll give them some pride.
Right. So you're actually mentioning several things. The pride they get from building something on their own. The ability to learn really a craft and a skill so they can get a good job. And then also the time to spend with their parents, which Frank had mentioned that that's been lacking.
Right.
So, Frank, tell us more about where the school's going to be and who's it going to serve.
Well, right now we've just been talking to people to see what kind of help we could get. I've talked to a lot of contractors that I know, and they're willing to help build this place, volunteer their time. we just haven't had enough response on funds, and you know, we need to find some land and things like that to start it. But a lot of people are interested in helping. We also wanted to have, like you said, body work, upholstery, auto mechanics, and get some more input from the kids themselves on what they would want. We need more people that want to help out.
Well, how can folks contact you if they're interested?
They could call Phil or me, I guess.
Okay. What's your number, Frank?
758-1918.
That's 758-1918.
Yes.
And that's area code 505. Phil, how about you?
It's 758-9037. And to add to what Frank said, what I understand was there's a lady that wants to donate 10 acres. There's a guy right here in Albuquerque wants to donate two welders. He's a welder instructor. He'll go up there and start the program and start teaching. What we're doing at this present time, we're just taking names.
And you all have already done a lot of service work, because, Phil, I know you've been involved in prison ministry in Taos and also in Tierra Maria.
Right.
Tell us about someone you helped there, someone you met in the prison and how you helped them. Can you tell us a story?
The guy told me to tell just his nickname. His name is Tiny. Weighs 280 pounds. I run across the guy at Napa getting some parts, and he hugged me. My nickname behind bars, or you might say jail ministry, is Lucille. Nobody knows me by Phil Prea. And the reason is I made a song from Kenny Rogers, Lucille, translated the words, and Lucille got saved. So I sing that song, and that kind of touches them. Well, Tiny said, hugged me and picks me up, almost breaks my back. I say, hey, cut it out, man. He said, Phil, I want to thank you for what you said behind bars. And I said, I don't know. I say a lot of things. What did I say? You told me to stand on the scriptures that pertain to my problem, and by God, it works, he told me. And I said, great. He said, I don't have much. But, you know, see that little truck? It's paid for. My kids, my wife took me back. It's a start. And I owe it to you. And I said, no, you don't. You owe it to the Lord. And just keep going in that direction. And you'll see greater things happen. I've been at it for about 13 years now. I blew it the first 6 years. They used to spit on my face, throw books at me, just tell me to go to hell. I've learned from my mistakes what to say, what not to say, and how to go about it. And I could walk into any prison, any jail, any reform school, and get them to at least smile, laugh, or accept the Lord.
So could you sing a little bit of Lucille for us?
Sure. Now Lucille's the hallelujah. She's out on street corners telling people how Jesus can save. She's a really holy roller, a Bible tongue talker. You'll be there when your she hits the grave. That's Lucille.
Thank you. Now, Frank, tell us the story, because somehow your mother had something to do with Phil getting involved in the prison ministry. Is that true?
Yes. My mom did the jail ministry in Taos for, I don't know how long, 15 years at least. And sometimes I was in jail when she was doing the jail ministry. I wasn't an angel myself. I thought I'd say that. But she'd be preaching to the guys in jail, and she'd go, oh, by the way, that's my son in the corner over there. And they couldn't believe it because they thought my mom was an angel or something. But I don't know, somehow she talked to Phil, I don't know how many years ago, 12, 13 years ago, and got him into the jail ministry, I guess, somehow.
So you two knew each other, right?
Yes.
How long have y'all known each other?
I've known Phil probably for 10 years at least.
And have you gotten involved in the prison ministry?
No, I do my own testimonies because I've been through quite a bit myself.
Like what? Tell us some stories.
Well, I had a drunk driver hit me head on. I broke my neck. I broke the atlas, which is the doctors told me like 95% die instantly, and if you live, you're paralyzed from the neck down. Well, as you can see, I walked in here today. I've been stabbed 16 times. I got jumped while I was deer hunting in the mountains by three guys. I've been run over by a car. My buddies ran me over. I was drunk. When I used to drink, I haven't drank in 21 years, but a bunch of stuff like that. I've had many accidents, many.
We've talked a little bit about prevention in terms of the economy, getting kids training and jobs. Is there anything else that needs to change in Taos for the violence to go down?
I would think the drugs. There's a lot of drugs in Taos. I know there's a lot of drugs everywhere, but the community has to stand up for their own community. Taos has to stand up for Taos. People have to start, I don't know what they have to do. I guess we have to figure out what we have to do about the drug problem, because most of the kids, most of these young gangsters are all hooked on drugs, all of them. They need help somehow.
What do y'all think about the media? Phil, for example, you know, most people I think would agree that the popular media, like television, movies, the video games, promote a lot of violence. Do you think there's anything we can do about the balance of messages in terms of violence versus forgiveness and peace?
Well, as far as the violence, even the cartoons are getting that way. And that's a bad start right there for a kid that's growing up watching TV, seeing that this guy's got a machine gun shooting these cars that are going down the road. And it seems like maybe the parents should say, hey, I don't want that on my kids' programs, or rebuke that. I think if they were to kind of get the parents to say, hey, I don't want you messing around with this, and be more outspoken to the kids. But we're getting to a stage where we're more liberated with our kids. I said, well, he always comes home. Well, he might be at 1 o'clock in the morning, but he always returns. That's not the issue. The issue is, what is he doing with his time? If we could just look into it and say, hey, hold it. Now, I don't approve with what you're doing out there, and put a foot in there, maybe we could get some response.
We're coming to the end of our program. Phil, if you had 1 minute to explain what you've learned from this experience, what would it be?
I would say pay more attention to your kids and see what they're up to. Just spend 1 hour, 2 hours, whatever it takes, 15 minutes. Spend some time, know where they're at. Not push them, not crowd them, but at least be a friend, not a father. Be a friend to your kids, and you'll see different results.
And Frank, what can you say to our listeners to encourage them to be more forgiving?
Well, each individual is different, so I know there's still a lot of people that aren't forgiving what happened. And I try and tell them you need to forgive, but in your own time. It takes, some people, it takes a lifetime. But the sooner you forgive, the better for you, I think. And that's just the way I grew up. Sure, I'm not perfect. I've never been perfect, and I probably never will be until I'm up there. But try your best to forgive.
Frank Talardo and Phil Padilla are working together to end the cycle of violence in Taos. Despite the fact that Phil's son has been convicted in the murder of Frank's son in a shooting incident in July of 2003. I'd like to thank each of you for being here today as our guests.
Thank you.
And thank you.
I'd like to give the phone numbers out again for those of you who are interested in contacting Frank or Phil to get involved with the trade school program. Frank's number is 505-758-1918, and Phil, 505-758-9037. We'll list those phone numbers, and you can also read more about this program or hear it again on our website, which is peacetalksradio.com. That's peacetalksradio, written as one word, .com. Also at the site, you can share your own stories of peacemaking or of forgiveness, sign up to be in our studio audience, or find out some information about ordering CD copies of this program or any of our other Peace Talks programs, all at peacetalksradio.com. Also at the website, you can find out about how your financial support can help keep Peace Talks on the air. Peace Talks is a production of Good Radio Shows Incorporated, and was recorded at the studios of KUNM in Albuquerque. Producer and engineer is Paul Ingalls. Music by John Mellencamp and Allie Adelman. Please join us for our next show on Friday, May 28th at 8:30 a.m. I'm Suzanne Kreider. Thanks for listening.